Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
You are listening to 95BFM Breakfast, and yes, it is time for some political commentary, and today I'm talking to Rod Oram. How are you, Rod?
Oh, Morena, Rachel, very well, thank you, and a Happy New Year to you.
Zoe, actually, today, but...
Sorry.
No, all good, easy mistake. Today we are talking about the state of the housing market in Aotearoa and also the imminent reopening of the border. Let's start with housing and, in particular, renting. Rents are at an all-time high. The median rent in the country has reached, I think, $540 per week, which is up 50 from last year. A huge portion of our population rent, 1.4 million people. But the Prime Minister has ruled out rent controls, which is an idea that the Greens advocated for, but ACT has called crazy. What do you think this stance on ruling out controls for rent says about our government's approach to mitigating our housing crisis currently?
From an economic point of view, let me turn that around the other way. From a political and social point of view, you can certainly make an argument for rents, rent controls, because that just tries to bring down the, keeps a lid on the rents over time. However, that's a monstrously bureaucratic process, it doesn't really work very well, not the least of which is it discourages investment in the housing market, because we actually need to have a bigger stock of housing, which will bring the price of housing down, which will then bring rents down. So we need an economic response rather than a sort of a bureaucratic response. So I think it is a good sign that the government is looking for those economic solutions to this rather than a bureaucratic one. Having said that, the Prime Minister says that she is very keen to re-establish housing affordability, but she makes no suggestion as what that means in terms of how much house prices would need to fall and how that's going to happen, other than emphasizing various things the government's do to increase in housing supply. Now, the housing supply is increasing, which is actually one of the reasons, and there's a whole bunch of others, why it looks as though prices are starting to turn and starting to fall. The other reasons for that are that interest rates are rising, and inflation is rising too. So and inflation is rising now faster than wages, so people are, budgets are more constrained. And there is, I think, finally a reality starting to get into people's heads, and that price of housing in New Zealand, whether it be rents or actually owning a house, is off the charts. We are top of the league in the OECD. And just to point out how extreme that was, it was only back in 2019, so that's only, you know, two and a bit years ago, that the ratio of house prices to income was 8, and now it's 11.5. And 11.5 is an extraordinary rate. But unfortunately, the government isn't doing enough on the supply side to bring, and it's really scared politically of house price falling. And so, for example, if there was just no growth in prices, it would take years to get back even to a ratio of 8.
Why would the government?
Were in 2019.
Why would the government be afraid of house prices falling? Because I guess just from my perspective, well, I don't know a huge amount about the housing crisis, but house prices falling would mean that more people could get into the housing market, no?
That's true, but the greater proportion of the people in the housing market are the people who already have houses,
right,
rather than those who are coming into the market. And those people are really enjoying that their house is worth so much, and that they feel richer for that. And if the price starts to fall, they feel as though they're going backwards economically. Mm-hmm. That's not rational, because we have to get back to not just 8 as a ratio. We actually need to get back lower than that. And the last time the ratio in New Zealand was at a reasonable level, i.e. around about 6 or 7 times income, that was back in 2005 was the last time we were at 7. We've touched and bumped along the bottom there after that, bumped along back at 7. But the last time we were well below 7 was back in 2005. So that's how extreme and how long the housing market has been completely dysfunctional in that sense.
So what should the government be doing in the short term? Besides, we know they're building houses, but is there anything the government could do short term that would help with the housing crisis?
Greatly improving the fairness of rentals, separately from price or alongside price, is a very important one. So security of tenure, quality guarantees about quality of that property and the livability in it. And so our rental market starts to look more like a high-quality rental market in other countries. A very, very positive development on that is we're now starting to see investors coming into the market to build, for example, apartment buildings, which are for the rental market, where they're going to be very happy with a good, steady, long-term return on that based on security of tenure for the tenants, but then also only moderately rising rentals over time. So that's so then it becomes a lot more socially beneficial to be a long-term rental, rather than these very short-term rents where you can be tossed out at very short notice because the owner of the buildings decided to change, you know, to sell up or whatever. Getting that security of tenure and quality of tenure into the market, it would be a very, very further fundamental and further in reforms to the rental market, which should be very worthwhile. And I'm not sure that the government's got the political appetite for that.
Now, I mean, we could talk about the housing crisis all day. It's such a complex and important issue. But I do also want to get your opinion on the imminent reopening of our border. So New Zealand's border will reopen to vaccinated New Zealand citizens and residents and eligible travellers from Australia on the 27th of February, coming up quite soon. And then on the 13th of March, we'll reopen to New Zealand citizens and other eligible travellers from the rest of the world. And MIQ is set to be removed for most travellers in steps, in a staggered approach over the course of this year, replaced by self-isolation and tests upon arrival. I mean, our border system, it's been a very... It's a complex issue as well. Families have been separated and that's extremely tough, but there's also been that balancing act of trying to keep everyone here in our health system safe from the pandemic. Obviously, differing views on how the government's opening the borders, some saying it's too soon, some saying it should have happened sooner. But how do you think the government has handled this reopening with its staggered approach? What message do you think this sends?
Well, SAG is very sensible because it's going to take a long while for aircraft schedules and people's appetite for travel and all of those issues to rebuild. Crucially, though, the tourism sector has been completely devastated by the pandemic, hit far harder than any other sector. And a large number of people, perhaps about a third, have left the industry entirely and are not going to come back. They've found other jobs or they've lost interest in the sector and are working on, you know, reskilling themselves and all the rest. So it's really important that the sector has a chance to have just a moderate flow initially to be able to build back up. Meanwhile, it's also been thinking over the last couple of years far more radically than any other sector about how different it's going to be post-pandemic. And it was on this journey before the pandemic because the inflow of tourists had risen so fast and put great strain on beautiful places in New Zealand and tourism infrastructure and pressure on the sector economically. And they're doing really, really good work on that that is going to give tourism in New Zealand a really greater expression of sort of who we are. And the the term that's used is regenerative tourism. So tourism isn't just sort of extracting economic value from the place, but in multiple ways, that place is telling its story better and is better engaged with those tourism, those tourists, domestic and foreign, and therefore gaining from that in that more rounded, holistic way. So that's all good. But the last thing they need is a huge rush of people coming in.
Yeah, I was going to say, with people having left the tourism sector and now reopening, are we prepared for tourism to start up again here?
It's going to be very difficult. I mean, I've over the last year have occasionally been in places like Queenstown for a conference, and it's clear that the hotels are just completely rusty, lost the plot, lost the staff to be able to cope. I mean, they manage, but not as efficiently and as hospitably as they had before the pandemic. It's going to be really hard for them, and I think they deserve a lot of help and a lot of support as they get as they gear up. But I'm very excited about that future for tourism, and I think a lot of people are going to be very cautious about traveling. It's not about necessarily catching COVID itself, but all the disruptions. So just as there have been supply chain disruptions in goods and services, that's also going to apply to tourism. It's just not going to be as easy to travel, and you won't be quite as certain about, you know, if you're going to go here, there, and everywhere on these days on that trip, it's all going to work out just as you had planned it. And I think that's going to make people cautious for a while.
Yes. Now, after over 2 years of this border policy, which has been very strict, what political effects have you seen this have on the government, both positive or negative?
I think it's still the larger proportion of people, a distinct and pretty large majority of people, who are... they might have some quibbles or whatever, but overall they are glad the government's done what it's done. But obviously there's been a growing minority of people who feel the opposite about that. The border has been the most contentious, and now that it's starting to open up again, I hope that some of that extremely strong feeling against the government will go away, or at least will begin to fade from people's minds as they begin to be able to travel freely. And the numbers were completely extraordinary. These numbers take into account people who travel the border multiple times, across the border multiple times a year. So it's literally just the flow of people across the border. And March 1999 was the year to March 2019. 2019, not 1999, was when we set our record of almost 4 million people from overseas and 3.1 million New Zealanders.
Wow.
7 million people a year, again, I stress some of those are multiple crossings, crossing the border every year. That's an amazing number. You know, we Kiwis love to go abroad.
We
There's
do.
Almost as many abroad of us. Almost as many abroad of us in June and July in our winter as there are foreigners here during our summer. And I think that's really important for people to have to see family, have those overseas experience, be able to work, all of those things. So we've got a great thing to rebuild back to. And, you know, we New Zealanders, you know, clearly love to travel. And I think by and large, we enjoy welcoming overseas visitors as long as we don't feel swamped by them. And of course, tourism infrastructure also benefits the rest of us. We have more domestic flights than we would have otherwise. You know, we have more facilities. We have more entertainment. We have more recreational opportunities because tourism geared up for international tourists also benefits us domestically.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Rod Oram. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Rod Oram,
of course, chatting about the housing market and the reopening of our borders. Ka kite, have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Talk soon.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.